Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as
Joe from Little Woman. I'm sorry, I don't care what y'all say. She gay. It was alluded to in the books that she gay. Greta Gerwig alluded to her being gay. So she gay and we claim her.
Yeah, wasn't there something about like the actual author of the book possibly being queer?
Yeah, they're sure. Saying that maybe had she had the language to express herself, or she knew what it meant to be queer, bisexual, that she would be, you know? They couldn't really confirm that. We can't confirm that now, but we know when we see one of our own. She queer.
What up, Corona?
What's poppin', Chingona? What's goody? Happy January.
Yeah, happy continuation to January.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, it's like the 20th already. For you guys, it's like the 24th or 3rd or something? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's the 23rd today. So that's pretty wild. Happy Thursday, y'all. We have a fun episode. We're covering two very different things, but I guess they're similar somehow. We're going to make the connection for you. You don't have to make that connection. But how have you been?
Not bad, yeah. I'm trying to think if I did anything interesting since the last time we talked. But I've mostly just been working, so I don't think so. Other than this, like, fiesta thing that I went to, that Luis from Molcajete invited me to, where I got to see all these people that I fucking love, like Armando from Undocumented Tales. I saw, of course, Luis and Pam from
Café con Pam.
Café con Pam. Yes,
I have the sticker. Yeah, Café con Pam.
Yeah, and a bunch of other really cool people. So yeah, I had a really good time. And I think that's pretty much what I've been up to since then. What about you?
Me and Glow have been sticking to like resolutions, and we've been eating better, and it's been helping me out a lot, honestly. Like, us eating better has been like, oh wow, I think this is almost somewhat manageable, but it's Monday and I'm gonna feel different maybe by Thursday or Friday. Maybe I'll get sick again, but I'm really just trying to, you know, harm reduction, you know, just not eat garbage all the time. So we'll see. I'm hoping that like I see a change in like my body. Not like, I'm not talking about like weight at all. I have IBS, so for y'all that don't know, now you know.
Oh, we all know at this point.
Okay, everybody knows I got IBS, so I'm just hoping like I don't get sick like 6 times a day now. So it's kind of gotten a little bit more chill and manageable. So hopefully I continue to be able to like have a manageable life where I can leave my house. So it's gotten better for like about a week, so I'm just gonna try to keep doing the same things I'm doing so I don't die all the time.
That's dope. Yeah. I'm keeping my resolution too.
No
so
meat
far.
No meat.
No meat.
2K20.
I've gone to sugar free mints.
I don't know. Dude.
That's been hard.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm like, meat, bye. I don't need you. Sugar-free mints, that's been hard.
Dude, if y'all don't know, like, Maitha is addicted to mints. And, wow, I'm really proud of you for, like, did you do cold turkey? Did you start limiting your mint intake? How did you do this? How are you doing this?
I was going to do, like, limited, but I've tried that before. It doesn't work. So I just, yeah, I did cold turkey.
Wow, you're brave, dude. Like, even me with, like, soda, because, like, actually, sugar-free is, like, the worst thing I could actually put in my body. Because, like, actual sugar is less harsh than all the chemicals for me and sugar-free. Like, sugar-free gummy bears fucking murder me. Sugar-free candy murders me. Anything, like, sugar-free, quote-unquote, is actually, like, the worst for me. I just, like, die. So I like that contrast that for you it's, like, it's good for you, and for me I'm like, no, I'd have to do like straight sugar or no sugar. So
yeah, I mean, like, when it comes to like not sugar free, mm-hmm. when I say sugar free mints, I mean it's literally just minty. Ooh. there's not a substitute sweetness or whatever. But I do like, I love me some Splenda with my coffee.
Look, Splenda is awesome. I love Splenda. We're really talking about Splenda right now, guys. We're washed.
Okay, obviously, yeah, we're boring old. As fuck.
Oh, it's fucking sorry. Anyways, going to things that are more interesting and more current than our diets. So these Oscar nominations, what do you think?
Obviously, you know, no pun intended, the fact that the Joker got 11 nominations is a fucking joke.
And, yeah, that's a good one.
It's just, it's trash. I don't understand it. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I'm sorry, that movie was fucking trash too. I don't understand how that one got so many nominations. I still have to see 1917 and Irishman, but I've seen the rest of the Best Picture noms.
Oh.
And the only one I give half of a shit about is Parasite. That one was great.
None of them are good, dude. Like, none of the movies nominated for Best Picture were worth a shit. And I didn't see... What was the only other movie that... Uncut Gems got completely snubbed. And I fuck with that movie.
I like that movie a lot. But it's like, I'm not one... I feel like, you know what? With the standards of what is on the list for this year's Best Picture noms, and yeah, Uncut Gems would have fit in.
That's the only
because
reason.
Because it's just like, there's just not that, I don't know. Like I said, I haven't seen 1917 or Irishman, but I've seen the rest of them, and I only liked Paris. I mean, Jojo Rabbit was okay, I guess.
That one's, I haven't seen it, so I can't criticize it, and... I just, come on, dude. What else do they have on it? Ford versus Ferrari? I don't think anyone saw that.
Oh, never mind. I haven't seen that one either, but I also don't plan to.
I'm not going to watch that. Irishman was boring, dude. I tried. When they did a CGI version of Robert De Niro, instead of just getting a younger actor to play him, it was wrong.
Did you read that thing where they're like, the most of the budget went to making the actors look younger?
Oh, dude, it did. It did. I was like, this is so fucked. Like, no one... He only looks 50 now. Am I supposed to believe he's in his 30s? Like, he looks like he's 50 still. So, I couldn't. After that, 15 minutes in, I got bored. I'm not a big Scorsese fan, though. I only liked, I think, Taxi Driver. I've tried to watch every other movie he's made, and I couldn't. It just was... It was really male and white. And you know, you'd think... I don't know. I like gangster movies. Like, The Godfather is amazing. Like, those 70s movies about gangsters. Like, that's Scorsese. But should he still be making those same movies? I mean, I don't care anymore, dude. And then Marriage Story got nominated for Best Picture? Dude, if they're going to have a Marriage Story, they can definitely have Uncut Gems. Like, that's ridiculous to me. And then, yeah, Joker, it was a waste of my life. Oh my god, dude.
You hated it a lot more than I did, but I still really was just, like, not that impressed.
No, dude. I mean, if they pick anything other than Parasite, I don't know if I'll watch the Oscars next year.
Here's the thing, is that they probably will.
Yeah, because the SAG, because they won at SAG, right? Parasite?
No, I'm saying they probably will choose something other than Parasite.
I mean, yeah, Green Book won last year, so I don't have high hopes for The White Man.
Yeah, I don't have any good expectations for this.
Dude, when Steven Spielberg backed up that decision to vote for Green Book, I thought that was really indicative. Like, maybe I'm not going to watch the Oscars next year? Like, I don't know if I will. It's kind of full of shit at this point. They nominated Scarlett Johansson twice, Best Supporting Actress... And then Best Lead Actress in Marriage Story? Get the fuck out of here. Who watched that shit for her? Yelling? Is that acting? I'm confused. That movie sucked so much. It merely made me hate Noah Baumbach a lot. Because I was like, oh, is this supposed to be your story? Fuck you, dude. You're a piece of shit. Like, fall off the world, please. Like, I don't like him that much. Like... That's so much.
I've seen.
I hate that movie.
Better acting on TikTok, like lately, bro. Like yesterday.
Rosa?
Like I don't. Rose is amazing. Yeah,
Rose is an artist.
One great example.
Rose is an artist, and now her counterpart, her unofficial counterpart, Marlene. I don't know. She's amazing too. Like they're both. Give them if we're like you said, if we're allowing all this other bullshit, why can't they win an Oscar? Like and then. What the fuck is up with Renee Zellweger being nominated for a movie no one has seen?
The Judy one?
Have you seen Judy?
No.
I don't know anyone. I've not met a person who's into movies that has seen Judy.
Yeah.
I don't know, dude. Are they buying shit at this point? I think they are. I think this is all just like a big money laundering scam where every now and then.
It comes down to campaigning. It's like, which kind of is trash. Yeah, it's kind of a money thing if you think about it.
To me, it is. I'm just like, who y'all paying? Who? What gangster is like, fuck it, I want Renee Zellweger to win an Oscar? Like, I feel like she's going to win. And I've not seen that movie, nor do I want to. Okay, Renee Zellweger, though.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Well, let's pivot because we're going a little long on the banter.
Yeah, sorry. I feel very strongly about that. Anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see how it goes. We'll probably talk about it again later. So L Word is what, 8, 7 episodes?
Seven
in
episodes in.
I was like not loving it at all. I was like not feeling chemistry between people. I was like not that interested in like the plot lines and stuff. But finally, just as soon as I canceled my Showtime subscription, it got good. It got kind of decent.
When did you cancel it?
Like 2.5 weeks ago or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't blame you. Everyone has their own reasons for hating the L Word, right? We have very, very good reasons for hating the OG. But this new one, like you said, like, I don't know where they're going with it, but now I feel like I know where they're going with it. And it's just classic L Word tropes that they created and they're following that method. I think they maybe gave us like this false sense of security where like, oh, they're just boring, like they're just existing, it's fine. And then now they're getting a little bit like, I don't know, into the plot. I still don't get
here, like, comes the betrayal.
Yeah, like the betrayal. I don't know. Do you hate any characters of the new?
I'm kind of annoyed at Alice's entire
story
thing. I don't know that I would say hate, but Alice's entire thing with her partner and such, it bores me a lot. I'm like, I don't care. I don't want to spoil, so I'm not gonna say names, but there was a couple at first that I was like, this should not happen, they have zero chemistry, this is terrible, like what are they doing? And then, but they're kind of like shifting that relationship into something that like I hate myself for liking. But
me too. Get to that.
Probably won't. Yeah, I just can't. I don't want to spoil anything for anybody. But yeah, maybe it'll be worth talking about once the season wraps.
Oh, I definitely want to talk about it because actually, I hated the first episode with my entire heart. That first episode was the worst. But ever since an OG character came back for like a second, it kind of like started to change the whole vibe of the show for me. And that's when I
started to give a shit about it. Yeah.
I didn't realize how connected I was to that character. And now
I
know.
It's just a coincidence. Now I know. No, I think it was like they just happened to like that character came back and at the same time that the story kind of started piecing together in the right way.
Yeah. And but yeah, I don't, again, the show has a weird start and kind of a weird middle, but I like that they're more inclusive. I like that they're more diverse, not to just be diverse. We'll see where that goes, but I really like the inclusion of the families. I like what that's doing. I like what that can do. So we'll see. I don't hate it. I'm kind of really fucking with these last couple episodes. But shout out to Gigi for being fine and for doing all the things correct. Have you seen the latest episode?
Yeah, I just watched it like an hour ago, dude.
Oh, shit.
Or a couple of hours ago.
Well, shout out Gigi for being anatomically correct and also just correct. And y'all will understand. Go watch that episode. Anyways. But yeah, like, we should definitely cover it. I fuck with it. And shout out to Alice. I love Alice. I just don't get her story either.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. Yeah. I think maybe it was just to pull in Gigi and Homegirl. And keep them
Which
in the
I just,
main cast.
I
hope they do.
Myself.
I think they're interesting and different.
I don't.
You know, you're like boring.
I mean, that's what I was talking about earlier. Couldn't give a shit. Yeah, not yet. But yeah, I guess let's get into our topics of the day before we get too far into our L Word hole.
Because we'll stay there.
Yeah.
But yeah. All right. So today we're going to be combining two very, very different, but also maybe similar movies and a TV show. So what will you be covering today, Maite?
I'm covering Little America, and I'll go second because it's a very new show. But when this comes out, it'll only not even have been out for 2 weeks.
Six days.
Once this episode's out, yeah, it'll be more than that. But yeah, it's very new. But I'm not going to spoil anything, so don't worry.
Yeah, no worries. And today I finally am going to talk about Hustlers, so I might just like nerd out. So please make sure I don't go on any deep dive tangents on my love for Keke Palmer. You know, I don't know.
Sorry to these mans.
And that's like the whole movie, but not really. But yeah, so I guess I'll go first, guys. Hustlers. Hustlers is one of like the funnest movies of 2019. It's a story of New York exotic dancers, strippers, entrepreneurs, self-made women, whatever you want to call women who just like take back their own fucking destiny. I love them, and shout out to Destiny. It's a story about strippers that begin to scam stupid men out of their money, and after this post-recession New York. It's based on a true story about Destiny and Ramona, who I ship.
It's about redistributing wealth.
Redistributing
our own way.
All the wealth. This is what Joker thought it was. This is what every fucking anti-capitalist movie other than Parasite thought they were doing. I would put Parasite and Hustler side by side and overthrowing the patriarchy and corporations and rich folk. I stan both of those movies equally. I think they have the same message. If you saw Parasite, it's going to be similar to Hustlers. Hustlers is a little more, you know, palpable to everyone. I don't think, and I see a lot of rich people saying that they want to get scammed. But the way that they love Parasite, because you know how all the rich people are like, oh, I love Parasite. And
they're like, dude, like, what perspective are you? I really think they're watching it from perspective of like, this is a horror film.
Yes.
Like, okay.
Yes, this is, I mean, well, this would be a horror film for dirty, creepy, for wealthy Wall Street dudes. This would be their personal horror story. But I love this movie so much. This movie is written, directed, and co-produced by Laureen Scafaria. You would know her from, like, Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist. And she also did Seeking a Friend for the End of the World. She's a bad bitch. The fact that she wrote the screenplay, produced it with J-Lo. J-Lo also produced this. Shout out to J-Lo. And this is when I'm going to give her
flowers.
Sorry,
but she... I'll talk shit about J-Lo any day, but yes. For this role...
No, not this one.
Like, she deserved nominations.
Dude.
And I mean multiple.
If they can nominate Scarlett Johansson, because she was a talking tree.
In
Marriage Story, it's a talking tree. I understand, you know, they don't think trees talk, and she's the first Asian American to get a lead.
No.
Dude. Oh man. But yeah. If they could nominate her, they could have nominated J-Lo, because that's how disrespectful the Oscars were this year. Like, if we can nominate her, well, J-Lo should be nominated for Best Supporting Actress for Ramona. The story centers Destiny, which is Constance, who is Constance Wu, and Ramona, who is J-Lo. It centers their relationship / you know, I think there's something more, because ain't nothing that they did. I don't know. Straight women don't necessarily always interact in such a healthy way. You know, like, society has done pitted women against each other for all the reasons. So the fact that their relationship is beautiful and centers around love and teamwork and taking down rich, wealthy men, which, come on, isn't that like your dream? Don't, like, if you dated someone, wouldn't you want like them to have the same ideals as you? Like, let's destroy the patriarchy. Let's take back our fucking power from these weird dudes. Like, dream. That's a dream girlfriend right there. So, and she looks like J-Lo. What's the problem? There's no problem. That's my wife. Anyways, J-Lo. Oh my god. Okay, so let's talk about J-Lo in this movie. She first appears to Fiona Apple's Criminal, which honestly, I've never been in a strip club that plays Fiona Apple, but who cares?
I would like to be. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, it's
I've never been to a strip club ever. I don't know if I've mentioned that 20 times. I probably have, but
you know. I've only been once, and it was a very, very enlightening experience at Ecstasy. Shout out Ecstasy. I mean, if y'all know Dallas and you've been to Ecstasy, it's people get shot in the parking lot. That's all I have to say. It was an experience. Anyways, shout out to them. It was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life. as a queer woman, I was like mouth open, like, what am I watching? That's when I knew that this movie wasn't going to be something that was going to... It wasn't like an indictment on the women and why they were doing these things, like, in a bad way. It wasn't like, oh, we're going to drag them. This is going to be this scandalous retelling of the story. It kind of wasn't even about, like, you know, evil women, which is what we're used to. It was about, like, legit women being amazing and using the few things that are already been given to them by God to scam stupid dudes. So I was into that.
It was about, like, the freaking recession. You know what I mean? Yes. This shit was, like, so... political.
It was a time, like, it was a fucking... I'm tired of movies about white little girls from the 1800s.
A period piece drama. Yeah,
it's a period piece,
period drama,
2008. And honestly, they have all the correct elements there. They have old Rihanna songs that slap, that old Usher song that you could never not hear no matter what you did, whether you're the strip club or on, like, listening to the radio, you heard that Love in the Club song by Usher. And J-Lo in this movie, like, we don't give her flowers for the two times she's acted well, which is one, Selena, and two, Hustlers. And
not The Cell?
I thought she was good in Selena.
What about The Cell, though?
Oh, The Cell. Did she act? No, yes, she is acting. you know, Enough. You know, J-Lo actually doesn't make shitty movies. You know, Wedding Planner was a good, like... romantic comedy. Look, anyways, I like J-Lo movies.
Hustlers is a good romantic comedy too, if we really talk about it.
Which one?
Hustlers.
I mean, Hustlers is a romantic dramedy. It was beautiful. J-Lo was amazing, but the best part of this movie, besides Kiki Palmer and Lili Reinhardt, probably I ship them too, was J-Lo's relationship with Ramona's relationship with Destiny. Now, Destiny is new to the club. She doesn't quite know what she's doing at this club. She doesn't quite know how to get her coins here because you have to tip the DJ. You have to tip the owner. Apparently, she tipped some other dude who's in charge of the VIP. So it's constantly about paying people off, which is, you know, the real world. It's how bills work. It's how capitalism works. Everyone's scamming out here. Absolutely every single person in this club and in this world is going to want something from you, and you're going to have to give it to them at some point, whether you like it or not. And that's capitalism. So I think this entire movie was like about how these women were fighting against that idea, yet they learned to work in that idea, and then they kind of became all the things that they were fighting against, you know? Like, they didn't want to get abused and used by these dudes, so they kind of just went into the system and started playing them at their own game, which men are stupid, right? Like, if you promise them sex, they'll give you anything because they're fucking dumb. And these women are geniuses for finding that power that they do have. You know, it's not like all of them went to school. It's not like all of them wanted to go to school, and they don't need to. Not everyone does. These women found power in what they already have, which is their looks. And you can take that really far if you look like J-Lo. Like, honestly, right? Look at J-Lo's entire career. Is it because she's a good actress, or is it because she's really nice and she's likable by literally everyone? Ramona is J-Lo, and just not, she's scamming all of us, not just rich white dudes. It's all of us she's scamming. And I appreciate that. I think that's really smart, and that's a really good entrepreneurial spirit that she has. Anyways, that's what the movie's about. It's about these women kind of forming this beautiful relationship together and falling in love, I guess, you know, to me. I don't think I'm alone. You think they're in love too?
I'm sorry, but if they didn't want us to think that, everybody collectively as an audience, they wouldn't have had the first meeting between J-Lo's character, Ramona, and Constance Wu's character, Destiny, their first scene would not have been like that beautiful. Like, climb into my fur coat with me. You are now mine. Like, I've no, like these J-Lo a kangaroo, because that was beautiful. Like, I don't. It was just like the most amazing thing I've seen in my life. And do you know how long it took for them to film this?
29 days.
Yeah, do you remember when Constance Wu like got really upset because Fresh Off the Boat had gotten renewed?
Yes, that wasn't that around the time she was shooting this.
I'm not sure. That's what I was kind of wondering about. I remember her being upset because they were renewing the show, and that meant she wasn't going to be able to do a certain project. And I'm wondering, is this that project?
I don't think it was.
And then maybe project. They worked it out. I think, and it was shot in 29 days because of that. You know what I mean?
Maybe. I would want the tea on that. I don't know the tea on that, because from my understanding is that she was maybe just starting shooting, and that's when she heard the news. I thought it was because maybe she had to say no to like the farewell or like some other developments that are popping up, you know. So I think maybe she was more pissed about that. But yeah, the 29 days could be the contributing factor. Also, J-Lo was going on tour, so I know that was a whole thing too. So maybe both of their schedules. I don't know.
But
we don't know the tea.
I mean, I've talked about it before. I love Constance Wu. She's one of my favorites right now. Because I've been watching Fresh Off the Boat since forever, and I think I've always thought she was really awesome. But yeah, if they didn't want us to think that they were a thing, like, they wouldn't have. Literally, this whole thing is about them too. Like, that was the central thing. That was like no matter what was going on in the story, it was about like what's going on between these two in that moment.
Dude, the scene where they finally reconnect after Constance Wu's character Destiny has her child. I wanted to just say spoiler that. Alert. I wanted to say that because, you know, Destiny. Anyways, I had to explain it. but anyways, when she sees her at the club the second time, and they meet up and they start holding hands and connecting, and it's too romantic, you know? Like, why make us think they're platonic friends when they spend the entire movie talking about each other, spending time with each other? Destiny's character gets jealous of Ramona's character when she brings in another new chick, and she gets jealous. I mean, I don't know. Their whole relationship seemed like so much more than friendship, and they didn't show it, but I know it in my heart that they're in love, and the whole movie is just talking about their relationship to each other, how they hurt each other, and how much that hurts each individual. The way that they ended this movie talking with Ramona talking about Destiny's character, I mean, they're in love, and I hope they reconnected at the end, because that was so fucking beautiful. Like, for a movie that's about redistributing the wealth, it was also about, I don't know, these queer women. I'm calling it that. They're not canon, but these women, they're in love, and they love each other in some way. All of these women love each other. There's this really, really wholesome Christmas scene where they're just buying each other really expensive gifts, fucking fur coats and pearls, and there's something really beautiful about what they found with each other, that family they created with each other.
Found family,
man. Look, gay people do that shit all the time too. Found family is like
that's our thing.
Yeah. So it's just kind of like, I was led to believe, and I still believe, that they're in love. Kiki, I want to talk about the side characters, because I really want to talk about Kiki Palmer's character. I think
I love Cardi B in this, by the way.
I'm gonna get to Cardi B. Bruh. But I'm gonna go to Kiki Palmer first, just because I think she could be in a whole other movie herself, just her being a stripper. But she brought such comic relief and joy to this movie. I fucking loved her character. Cardi B made a little splash, just a little bit, but it was a really, really natural role for her, of course, because she actually is this person. But it was so well done. I don't know, maybe it was like a scheduling thing, or maybe they couldn't afford to have her more in the movie, or I thought her acting was very natural, very spot on. I usually don't think like musicians or artists make the best kind of like actors, but she did really fucking good. You're going to notice when you watch this that you also see Lizzo. And this was, right before she like got big. Before she became Lizzo.
I mean, the movie came out after, but it was
she shot this a month before,
I'm sure.
Yeah, like, I think it was a couple months before she blew up. Like, she wasn't the Lizzo that we know now. Like, when she was shooting this, she was just like, I was still listening to her. So that was a minute ago. And then you're also going to see Trace Luzette. She is a openly trans, like, musician. Like, she's also a consultant for Pose. And I thought that was a really cool addition to have, like, trans women dancing there. I thought that was fucking dope. There was another actress. I didn't write her name down, though. I feel bad. But they had a lot of, like, models and, like, different kinds of people and different body types at the strip club, which I thought was really cool and interesting. Because in reality, strip clubs, you know, it's a little bit varied. You know, it's not just, like, it depends where you go, right? So I'm assuming they had, like, a really nice, varied, diverse strippers at their club, which isn't always the reality. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Cardi B, just... Look, give her a movie. That woman's funny. That woman was natural. And when she was dancing on J-Lo, I almost passed out. I don't know. It was a lot for me. It was a lot. I was like, I can't take this. J-Lo looks way too comfortable right now. Like, she's chilling. I would have died or something. I'm like, I can't handle this. J-Lo's, no, there's too much. But for as tantalizing as it could have been, I don't feel like it was that. Like,
It wasn't male gaze yet.
No.
This whole thing was very much like for the girls, you know what
yes.
I mean,
like the female gaze is so important because it's not creepy, it doesn't feel gratuitous in any way. It felt appropriate and it was funny, it was lighthearted, and for that, like, this movie, I love this movie. I've seen it about 4 or 5 times already. It's just so much fun. You watch it and you want them to buy more, like, things. You don't ever feel bad about any single thing that they're doing. Yes, they're breaking the law, but yes, I don't give a fuck either, and I want them to keep breaking the law and keep getting their money and their coins. And I just wish that in real life, like, they could have got away with it. I'm not against that. Like, I'm sure many women did. Cardi B said she got away with it, so I ain't mad at her.
There's so many movies that get made every single year about white dudes who, like, scam for, like, way more money and do way more harm than these women ever could do. Like, literally, I just watched The Big Short the other day, and it was, like, exactly that. Like, somebody taking advantage of, like, finding this loophole in the system or whatever. Like, or freaking Wolf of Wall Street or all these other movies, like, that get made every fucking, like, other month about the same exact thing. Same. But, like, because it's, like, you know, women and women of color and this and this and that, and using your body, like, it's such a bad thing. Like, no, fuck you, we need more movies like this.
They're heroes. Some heroes don't wear clothes at all, and they're my kind of heroes. There's one line from the movie that I thought was, like, really clever. Well, not clever, it was, like, blunt, over the head, straight to the point. But I thought it was interesting, because J-Lo was convincing the other women to join her as they drugged these men and took their money and got their credit cards for them. She's like, they stole from everyone, and not one of these douchebags went to jail. And I was like, man, I really fucking hate that they had to go to jail, because fuck these dudes, they did bankrupt all of America. They can go, none of them. I think the only bank that went to jail was an Asian woman-owned bank, and I think it was, like, she did time. She was the only one in the entire recession that did time for doing the exact same thing that these giant banks did. So, I don't know. We need some kind of, like, restorative justice for these women. The real life Ramona is suing J-Lo's production company, which I thought was funny because there wasn't really anything defamatory about these women. Like, I feel, in my opinion, that they told a very, very... they told this story very respectfully.
Is that what she's suing her for?
Yes, but she's only suing her for, like, one very minor defamation. Like, she couldn't find anything. None of it was bad, right? Like, it's very...
Well, because even if it is, like, isn't defamatory, like, did they have the right to tell that story?
I think I'm guessing she was working with J-Lo. They asked her to be in it. She turned it down. And then...
But they did have the rights to the story.
I believe they did. The only reason she got mad at them, she wants money because she is real life Ramona, right? So she is suing J-Lo's company because she said that she said she only found a problem with one part. She said that it was when they were cooking drugs while her daughter was home, while Ramona's daughter was home.
Oh.
That's the only part where she was like, I don't do that. I went to go buy the drugs from a drug dealer. She's like, I would never make the drugs with my child in the home. And I was like, okay, that's valid. But besides that, she didn't have anything else to say because there was nothing else defamatory. Like, everything else was like pretty nice. I feel like they're very kind to all the women and they didn't drag any of them. None of it was salacious to me. You know, it was heartwarming, you know? That was the only part that she had a problem with.
This is a cute Christmas movie.
Christmas movie. Watch this with your kids. I mean, your grown children, you know, 18 and up. Make sure they're adults. But anyways, I give this movie 5 panluzas. Six panluzas? Yeah, 6 panluzas. Okay. Like... It only exists for this movie because I really, really hate rich fucking assholes that bankrupted this entire fucking country and then they have the audacity to put them in jail. Fuck that. Like, these women deserve trophies. Like, fuck that. They just got caught. I'm so sorry they got caught. What do you think of this movie? Mm-hmm. I know you love it.
I love that movie. Yeah, it's a great fucking movie. Especially, like, you know, it's not like being put up on a pedestal, like, Parasite is or anything, but for what it is and like for what it's gotten, the recognition that it's gotten, like, it's pretty fucking solid. Like, I don't know, no cafecitos for me.
Yeah, I think it's not loved the way it should be and on a critical scale, and there's not much people that fucking hate that movie, so
yeah, like, who's over here talking about Hustlers wasn't good? Like, nobody says that.
But they're not giving them the acclaim either. And I'm confused why. Because it's lowbrow to these, like, assholes who put Marriage Story on there. Like, Marriage Story sucks. Like, they could have farted halfway through and they still liked it.
Huh? If The Big Short got as many awards as it did, like, Hustlers should have gotten that many awards, too.
Or at least nominated. I don't care if it wins. Yeah. It deserves at least the critical acclaim, it's deserving to be there amongst...
But this is a common thing. Like, a lot of women directed and written and led projects tend to get a lot of less recognition, whereas, like, The Big Short was mad male, so...
Also, like, there were no, like, fucking white leads. I mean, there was an Italian lead, right? Like, J-Lo, but... But other than that, they weren't white.
J-Lo's Italian.
Yeah, you know, I gotta keep it real. But I mean, other than that, I think that's a contributing factor too, right? Like, they're strippers, they're women of color, and it's directed by a woman. Those are all the things that make it lowbrow, but are all the things that speak directly to my soul. And I'm like, nah, fuck that. That's exactly all the
things that make it an original freaking movie. I don't know.
This is amazing. Y'all go watch Hustlers right now. I'm hype on it. It's great. It's the American fucking story. Like, this has been happening all across the world, but it started here. And it traveled. They were doing this shit in Colombia after this, like in 2009. It's been a thing. The first thing I heard about it was like in 2009 in some like Vice article. But anyways, I digress. What are you gonna be talking about today?
Well, like I said earlier, I'm talking about Little America. So it just came out like days ago on January 17th, mm-hmm. And the way I like describe it is that it's like Black Mirror. But instead of technology, the theme is immigrants, basically. Because it's an anthology series, 30-ish minutes per episode, 8 episodes total in the first season. This shit got renewed before it even premiered.
As it should.
Like, that's how good it is. It's on Apple TV, and I watched it on, half of it on Friday, half of it on Saturday. Like, that's how good it was. I had to wait until, emotionally stable.
Yeah,
because it's really, really emotional. So it's basically based on true stories. Like, each episode is a true story with real people from a collection that was featured on Epic magazine called Little America, actually, by the same name. Kumail Nanjiani and his wife Emily Gordon are involved. They're from The Big Sick. That's also a movie that I really like. And a few other people that we've talked about before, like some people from
Master of None, show with Alan Yang.
Master of None, yeah
Alan Yang.
Mm-hmm. Alan Yang's involved. Yeah, and it was mostly filmed in New Jersey, but the last episode, which is, I'll talk about later, obviously, it was filmed in Canada because of Executive Order 13780 or whatever, which Trump signed in 2017. It literally, like, prevented actors from being able to go to New Jersey or enter the U.S. at all in a fucking show about immigration. Yeah, like, because there's like certain countries in the executive order that, like, they have limited travel from.
Fuck.
And this was that episode was about, like, a Syrian refugee. Damn. But anyways, that was just like fucking cherry on top, like horrendous. But it was filmed in that last episode was filmed in Canada. So I'm gonna keep it pretty spoiler free, like I mentioned before, because it just came out. And it's just too beautiful to spoil, honestly. Yeah. Like, I love it. I love every single bit of it. Well, almost every single bit about it. I'll talk about that. I'm going to go in order with each episode. Ooh, so
that first episode.
Episode one. Yeah, it's good. It's called The Manager. It's kind of a first-generation kid story. One that we are pretty familiar with. It's kind of an extreme, though. We basically see this like perfectly happy boy have his life be kind of turned upside down, like, and we follow his kind of like lonely transformation into a man. And like, so I mean this is not, obviously we're not a first generation kids are not a monolith, like we don't have all the same experiences, but a lot of the times we have to like grow up faster than our peers. We have to start working younger. We have to raise ourselves sometimes because our parents are like working really fucking hard, or because like in this case they're literally taken away from you. I think without trying too hard, this episode like really shows like what the meaning of doing it the right way is, and I put that in quotation marks, like when it comes to whatever, like immigrating. Like, that literally means like 10 years of waiting. It means a ton of money that people don't really have, especially when they're trying to like go to a place with more opportunities. Like what the right way is, they don't fucking understand it. And when they say that, they don't understand it. That's what it means.
How could they?
So
they've never made that sacrifice.
They've never had to really think about it. Nope. Like ever. It's not even an option for some people. Especially now with fucking Executive Order 13780. So there's that. So, like I said, I don't want to spoil this. It's about a kid, and you watch him grow up, and it's really fucking hard. And even if you didn't have, like, the worst case scenario, like he, you know, like some other people have, like, you can still relate to some parts of it, of having to raise yourself, of being alone. Well, this is one of my favorite episodes, but not my favorite.
So much.
Like, if it gets better than this, like, you already know this is an amazing show.
I cried so much this episode. I mean, more the next one, but I cried so much this episode.
I cried for, like, so many of these things. So, moving on to episode two, it's called The Jaguar. It's probably my second favorite.
Who directed it?
But it was really close. It was directed by Aurora Guerrero. Hey. We talk about her constantly. You guys have to know who she is. She was on the show a while back. Go look up that episode now. So it's definitely done in her style. If you've seen her feature film Mosquita de Mari, like, you'll recognize some of the stuff. My worry when I started watching Little America was that it would be like a tragedy porn type of situation, or like a made for white people to feel guilty, like a Green Book type of shit. It's truly not. Like, this episode two literally proved me wrong on that really quickly, and I'm glad it did, because it highlighted like the determination and like the talent and the fire inside of this girl who happens to be Latina and undocumented, and the daughter of a single mom who's trying to make ends meet and do the best that she can. You know what I mean? It's not just like, oh, my life is super hard. It's like, look at what I've gotten, look at what I'm doing anyways. And like, And by the way, that single mom was played by Melina Bovedia, who is a friend of the podcast, and she's fucking amazing, mm-hmm. and I hope to have her on pretty soon. But yeah, like, I immediately was shown, like, this series is to tell the story of immigrants, not to, like, make people sad or make people... It does make you cry a lot, but sometimes those tears are really happy tears, and a lot of... In this episode, I was very, very happy and happily crying, because it's, like, you know, our joy is like real and palpable. I don't know, especially with this episode, she's the jaguar, and I don't know, I'm so glad that it was episode 2 for that reason, because it's just like you need a little bit of healing after
that first episode,
the trauma. Yeah,
no,
which wasn't even like the harshest episode really at all.
I'm only on episode, like, 3,
not even close,
so I'm trying
it's like episode 1's kind of light in comparison to one of the other ones.
Dude, well, yeah, one thing about this episode I did like was I mean, we can both relate to, like, our
spoiler for you, but yes, yeah, go on.
We can both relate to the mother and what she does for work, and then there's that one scene, she's at a party, I'm not gonna give anything away, she's at a party and someone comes up to her and says, oh, I didn't know you did this, and she's just like, like, all her worlds start to collide, and she has to say how she knows this white woman, and that's like, damn. Like, I felt that. I don't know. Do you know what scene I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, there's a moment where, like, that, I don't know, I guess some people probably have gone through. I think I'm pretty sure I probably went through something similar. Mm. I'm not sure that exactly that, but yeah, she, I don't think that's spoiling it. Like, her mom, you know, is an immigrant mother. Like, she works in, you know, as a cleaner, and I forget what else she does. She does a bunch of stuff, I think. But yeah, she's like, has to say it, and she says it like really loudly and proudly, which but I kind of liked.
It's the way the other people react. It's not really what she says. It's, she's like, yeah, mm-hmm. this. But it's the way the other people got. And you're like, wait a minute, why are y'all being weird? And then you're like, oh, fucking class. This is weird. Like, this is the whole class mm-hmm. thing. So when y'all see it, y'all know what I'm talking about. I don't want to.
It's, yeah, it's a wonderful episode. It's my number 2 at the very least. Maybe it'll change once I reflect on it some more. I don't know. But yeah, fucking watch it. Okay, episode 3. This one's called The Cowboy. I thought this was like a very wholesome show. I mean, episode. Like, it's just like some parts of it are really heartwarming. It's almost like an adventure type of thing. I don't know. I thought it was really like a lovely, lovely episode. It was another one where you see the main character as a boy and then as a man later.
It was adorable.
Basically, it's a Nigerian man who goes to Oklahoma for school, and he's struggling to fit in. And he ends up finding a connection with other people through cowboy culture, which is why it's called Cowboy. And it's kind of a adorable, like, everything, because in the backdrop, of course, like, there's tough shit, you know what I mean, there's stuff going on in his country that that he's having to deal with, that his family is having to deal with, but it's like he still has to live his life, and he still has to try and make connections in his current home. So I'm not gonna give too much more away on that, but I'll just say that this is a very wholesome episode, and once again, not tear porn, and it's just lovely.
Yeah, yeah. He took Be the Cowboy really seriously in a cute way, though. Like, no more white cowboys mm-hmm. in 2020.
Don't need them.
Don't need them.
So, episode 4, I have the least to say about. It's called The Silence. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah, I don't have much to say about it at all. It's called The Silence because probably 95% of it is there's no one talking in it. It's very different from all the rest of them. It's, the main character is a white woman. I believe she's French. And yeah, I'm not gonna go into it. It's kind of a love story. Kind of. And mm-hmm. yeah, I won't go too much into it. Didn't really care much about the episode. Not that there's anything wrong with it. It's just like...
It wasn't for you. Okay.
Yeah, I couldn't connect with it in the slightest. So do what you will with that information. I still think you can watch it. Maybe I'm not like I just have no connection to it. I don't know. Anyways, moving on.
Yes, moving on.
The baker is comes after that. The baker, I love this episode because it shows this Ugandan woman finding a love for all of these like American things, and I put American in quotations once again. But things like chocolate chip cookies and having drinks every now and then, which isn't something that she used to do, getting a divorce, being okay, things like that. Like, she doesn't have to be this perfect Ugandan daughter. Like, she can just be a little reckless sometimes, and that's okay.
That's awesome.
Immigrants are human.
That's fucking awesome.
You know, they learn and they grow and stuff. So I thought it was just really cool, like, because you have, like, I don't know. I think there's certain expectations set upon immigrants, especially when they're here. And this episode was like, fuck you, I'm going to do me. And it was really cute. And I thought her, like, story not centering around men was really great. And her story, I mean, she basically ended up becoming, no, that's too spoilery. I don't know. The point is that she's American as fuck for a Ugandan woman. And I love it for that reason. It's also pretty wholesome of an episode.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah. The one after that is called The Grand Prize Expo Winners.
No, is this the one?
This one. No, this is not the one. Okay. But this one tore me up, dude. This one made me cry.
Damn.
This one is about a mom who is very, some would say, overly attached to her children.
Mm-hmm.
This was probably my third favorite episode.
Okay.
It was, it got me in my feelings really bad. It touches on the subject of, like, China's one-child policy. And basically the mom's feelings of abandonment. And those always get to me. So it's kind of all about the mom and her kids kind of growing up. And they win a cruise ship, like a free cruise ship vacation thing.
That's cool.
So, because she's very lucky, and that's the whole thing. And you find out, like, towards the end, kind of about her history, and it's just like, it's a blow to your heart.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, it's just such a beautiful episode. I was my third favorite, and I can't give anything away, but it's about a single mom.
Okay. It sounds good, though.
It's, I trust two kids. You. Yeah, third favorite. Made me cry like a bitch. I just can't really say much about it. But yeah. The next episode is called The Rock. What the main message kind of in this one is that, like, not every immigrant story is a rags to riches story. Some are, like, literally the opposite. And in this case, it's mainly about a father, and he's from Iran. And he, like, literally had everything he wanted in a career and a home and businesses. And he was thriving in Iran. And now he's in the U.S. and he's trying to kind of do the same, but it's a lot harder for him. So it's kind of about him trying to bring up his family and, like, his just solid determination and stuff like that. So also not a whole lot to say about this one. But it was pretty solid for what it was. Mm. It's called The Rock, so it was very solid. No, I'm kidding.
I get it. Yeah, it took me a second. I'm kind of dumb, but I got it.
Okay, last episode.
This is one?
This is the one. This is number one.
Oh, okay.
This one's called The Sun.
Mm-hmm.
It's my favorite. It's when I first started listening. When I first started watching, I was kind of frustrated with the main character. He's a Syrian man. And he's, like, hanging out with his family, and he's, like, but he's getting messages on his phone. So you can tell, like, somebody, he's trying to, like, find an excuse to leave this little family gathering that he's at. And I was just thinking to myself during, I was like, dude, just stay with your family dinner thing. Like, why do you have to, like, go leave for a hookup or whatever it is?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was my privilege talking, because, like, I don't have to suppress myself very often.
Mm-hmm.
This story is about a queer man.
Oh.
And I don't have to look for an outlet, right? Like, I live in a very liberal place right now, and not everybody is that lucky. So I don't want to give anything away from this episode. But yeah, it's about, like, a gay Syrian man. He ends up trying to get asylum in America, because shit kind of spirals really, really, really badly for him. It's probably the most triggering episode of the whole series. There's like a lot of really violent bits. And there's like also the most beautiful parts that you could ever imagine. Like, there's friendship in it, there's like love, there's like seeing like a man who's really like suppressing himself and seeing another one who's doing literally the opposite, and you're fearing for both of their lives, and you're seeing them connect in like a platonic way, which is great to see for me, because like it's always like a love thing, but this, none of these were ever like really,
I mean, it's still a love thing, a love, just not romantic love.
Yeah, it's not a romantic love thing. It's a very hard story, but the most beautiful one, and like the one that kind of puts everything in perspective. And I think this is the only queer story of all of the all of the episodes. And yeah, obviously my favorite one. I think I love it for a lot of the, actually I don't. I don't love it for the same reasons that I love Circumstance, but it reminds me of that because Circumstance also has that very heavy part to it, you know, like. But this one.
Oh my god.
But Circumstance is,
I'm
like,
not ready.
But Circumstance is like a.
You said Circumstance.
More romantic-y type of thing, which has, The Sun is not that. It's different. It's
still like love, though. Like friends love each other too.
Oh my god.
Yeah, but it's like not about that either, you know? I mean, it is like, that's a big part of it, but that's not all it's about.
No,
it's really about finding like your own happiness and being yourself and stuff like that. It's 100% worth watching. Once again, it's not like for white people to feel guilty. It's not tear porn at all. This is like, even though this is a very hard episode, it's a very beautiful episode.
Did you notice that most of like the writers and the directors of every episode correlate to the story that's being told?
Yeah, I think that's on purpose. There's even one episode, I won't say which one, but one of the characters in the true story directed it.
Oh shit.
Later on. Yeah, it's really, really cute. It made me, in that, like, I cried already in that episode, but I cried again when they said that at the end. I was like,
that's like our whole entire like genre, the genre we want. Is that the entire series, Little America, is everything we wanted.
It has everything, like fucking homeboy from SNL skit. God, what's his name?
Really? Has an SNL dude?
No, it doesn't. Like, there's a skit where, oh my god, I forgot his name, where he's like, this club has everything. Like,
this club, you know, has everything.
Okay, anyways, I can't remember right now, and I don't care enough, but yeah, this show is everything to me, like, other than that one episode. I absolutely love it. I would show, like, you can watch in whatever fucking order you want, you know what I mean? Like, this is an anthology series. I would say just watch it in the order that it's in, like, fuck it. Especially since, like, the last one is the hardest one, like, yeah, I would just leave it in that order. They chose a perfect order. And they have people from all these different countries and people from all walks of life, because immigrants are not the same, and like different perspectives of all kinds and ages and gender and all that stuff. Like, yeah, I loved it.
One of the things that I noticed and that I really like was that Alan Yang also produced on Master of None, and my favorite episode on Master of None is just where they take the story and they completely get off Aziz Ansari and they talk about everyone else in the city. And to me, that's what this whole series was to me, was them taking that POV, that, you know, that one episode of Master of None that was not about anyone except the other people that I've always wanted it to be about. And they made a whole series out of it. And I'm wondering if Alan Yang maybe had been thinking about this from Hot Minute, because that was a whole episode. It was my favorite episode. It had nothing to do with anything. It was just, hey, we're going to tell you the story about regular ass New Yorkers, the doorman, the guy who's driving your Uber right now, like the deaf lady at the store. Like, those kind of stories are the things that I want. And I feel like this whole series, maybe he had been thinking about it for a while. If I could ask him a question, I would ask him that one. You know, like, how long have you been thinking about this that one thing inspire this? How long have you been thinking about it? So I don't know. He's the producer for this whole series. So I think that's an interesting, that's the connection I make when I watch this series and when I think about the things he's done in the past. So shout out to him.
Yeah, or I would probably more think that if he was in charge or like connected to that specific episode, that's why he was maybe considered for it, because like I mentioned earlier, this whole series was based on like a pre-existing collection of true stories. Mm-hmm. Like this stuff wasn't really fictionalized or anything. It was just brought to life by the right people. Yeah.
I'm just wondering if like one inspired the other, you know, like which, you know, chicken or the egg, which one's the chicken, which one's the egg, you know, I want to know.
Because I think Little America, like the collection and the stories were out before Alan Yang did the anthology series.
And I think, yeah, to me, I'm just like, okay, that's interesting, because that's right up in the genre that I wanted. That episode is, to me, still a standalone. I go back to it just to watch that because it was so beautifully done. So I just think, well, if I could ask him a question, it'd be that. But yeah, so how many cafecitos do you give this series?
None, except for episode, the silence episode. I don't, I could do without it 100%. Like, you could just cut it and I'd be like, great.
Now I really want to watch that one and The Rock, of course, because, I mean, gay people, of course. I gotta watch it. I gotta support it.
No, the Sun is what
The Sun, my bad, The Sun. I just remember The Rock because you made the joke. But yeah, so... zero cafecitos. Y'all know what to do.
Yeah, get your 7-day free trial and watch Little America. And if you have time, I guess watch Dickinson. Like, this shit's so good.
I love to hate it.
Yeah, oh, Dickinson. No, like, mainly that. Watch Little America. Don't even touch Dickinson until you're done with Little America.
Yeah, that's y'all's homework, y'all. Watch Little America. And then, you know, Emily Dickinson as a treat, you know, like, just, you can have a little, you know, not a lot. Oh my God, my attempts at jokes.
But yeah, that's pretty much it. Do you know what Hustlers is available on to watch right now, if anything?
Yeah, you can buy it on Amazon Prime like I did, so if you ever want to watch it, Maita, you can watch it now on a loop.
Sweet.
Yeah, I bought it.
Cool.
Yeah, good. It's on Amazon, YouTube, Google Play. You can buy it anywhere. Streaming wise, please give Loreen, Scafaria, and J-Lo their money. They deserve it. Give them the $3.99. You know, if you can buy a non-homophobic chicken sandwich, then you can also afford to buy or rent this movie. Go for it.
Yeah. And then just some like news to wrap up that we've already talked about it, but the Fortnite is coming at the end of this month. I think like the 28th this month. I saw the first episode. It's absolutely fucking amazing.
I'm jealous.
Watch it. It stars Ali Swarens, who we talked about on our Patreon last week, but City of Trees, which she created and wrote and starred in as well, and Corey worked on as well. It's on Amazon Prime for fucking $3.99.
$3.99. So, y'all go watch it.
$0. Yeah, go check that shit out. We went really into depth on it on patreon.com/CUSU podcast. If you want to go support us there, that would be amazing. You can also buy merch on Teespring from us. The links are in our bio, in the description of this episode, and on the website, gabronazichanganas.com. And follow us at CUSU podcast on Instagram and Twitter.
See. Y'all be good. Y'all be blessed. Go watch Little America. Wash your face.
Immediately. Right now. Cut this off. Go watch it. Okay, bye.